Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, been saying.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. On the other end of the line with me tonight, all the pits. Mr. Pat, Steven, Pat, guys, how are you?
Great.
Oh, man, I'm doing pretty good. I'm running a little late, but I'm here. I'm doing good.
Now, let me get this right. That was Mary Catherine. That's your daughter's name, right, Patrick?
Mary Claire.
Mary Claire. I'm sorry. Okay. She just came in right before we started recording, and it was so cool. Hey, Pappy. Coming to see you tomorrow.
Yep, she's been talking about seeing Nana and Papa all week.
Yeah, she owes us a bunch of hugs.
Oh. And then, Steven, you had Reed out at teal hunting this past weekend, Mr. Pat.
Yeah, I remember this time last week we were kind of discussing it, the possibilities, me going over. And, we made that happen last weekend. Me and Reed drove over Saturday morning bright and early and joined Dad in the pit, and the three of us had a pretty good shoot Saturday morning.
It was great. I just, when Stephen pulled up there at 6 o'clock and, Reed white-eyed and bushy-tailed in his pajamas in the car seat, and, he ragged him up and put his little boots on and then carried him to the pit. And I'm standing there, watching all this unfold, and I'm thinking, boy, it seemed like last week when I was doing this with two little boys, and it just kind of came full circle. And you couldn't have asked for better cooperation with the teal. I mean, we could have loaded the pit with them. I mean, it was just waves of them coming up the field. And
how
that kept him from getting bored.
How fast does it go by, Mr. Pat?
Well, the most I've seen them clock is 30, 35 miles an hour.
So No. You were talking about seeing Reed in that pit with you, and it's coming full circle. There's so many young people with young kids right now listening to this podcast. How fast does it go by?
Oh, just a nanosecond. It's something that I look forward to, and more so, and we'll be getting Mary Claire, and I told Stephen, I said, I'm going to be in the pit with both my grandkids, Olivia, if they want to carry her out there. She's, I don't know how old she is, about 6 months old or whatever, but it was a thrill for me if I hadn't have pulled the trigger. Stephen and I shot well, and Steve Reed got to see birds, lots of birds flying, not only teal, but pintails and spoons and whatnot, but it was a thrill for me, and it brought back such great memories from years ago when I had two little boys.
Did when you're walking into a pit with your son and your grandson doing your most favorite thing in the world, duck hunting? Do you have these flashbacks, like almost like TV flashbacks, as you watch, kind of watch them walk ahead of you, and you see him carrying Reed into the pit? It's got to just bring back flashbacks of when Steven or Patrick, either one of them, were you know, 4, 5, 6 years old going to the pit with you the first time. And I'm not trying to make this a sappy episode. I'm not. But, you know, this is y'all's life. This is who you are.
Well, one of my favorite pictures that we have on the wall is I've got both my boys with their muddy little boots on sitting on my shoulders in a field that we used to hunt. And you know, watching Steve and Kerry Reed out there, and, I mean, you know, I could just, like, close my eyes and, you know, visualize me doing that to him 30-some-odd years ago. And seeing Reed's eyes light up when the birds were flying and the dog bringing them back and you know, just watching the thrill in his eyes, there again I could close my eyes and see Patrick and Stephen, you know, with the same expression. And it just, people that have never done that don't know what I'm talking about near as much as the ones that have. I know, for instance, Jim Cruz, Bill Cooks, and whatnot have gone through the same thing with their kids. And you know, it just made my day. I mean, I was totally at peace with the world. Watching Reed try to drag 12 teal down the road to the truck was kind of comical, but he was a trooper and didn't whine and complain and, you know, didn't sit out there and want to eat something or whatnot. He had a good time, and I know Mary Claire would have been, you know, right there with it too. You know, Patrick's going to make her into a princess duck hunter, probably. I mean, I'm not going to call her a tomboy. That's disrespectful to my granddaughter, but she's going to be in there just as hardcore too, I feel certain.
But it's got to bring a smile to your face as you look.
Well, you couldn't have slapped a smile off my face with a boat paddle. it was great. You know, I got, you know, Reed had his little pow-pow. You know, I'd have to cock it for him so he could shoot it, you know, whatever. You know, I'd cock it for him again so he could pull the trigger again. It was a whole new world, new element for him. Having my grandson there, won't be long before I've got be in the same pit with my granddaughter, because Mary Claire's chomping at the bit, I know. You know, when Patrick already said, well, we may be taking over the back bedroom when Mary Claire comes, I said, fine. That's what we got it back there for, is for special guests. So I know she wants to be there.
Yeah, she's already told me she wants to go every time I go. So once we get the opening weekend crazy out of the way, she's liable to make quite a few trips up there this year.
Well, you know, it's like I told the boys and told Gail, as long as they want to go, I'm going to take them. I'm not going to force them to go. If they want to play the piano, you know, God forbid I'll get them a spinet or whatever those things are, the Benelli of the pianos. But they made their own choices of what they wanted to do. Like I said last week, Stephen quit playing football so he could duck hunt. I don't blame him. It's a lot more fun shooting a duck and getting run over by somebody bigger than you are. But I look forward to it, and I hope it plays out like we want it to. But there again, I don't think either one of the three of us are going to pressure these kids, because I didn't pressure them. I just said, you know, hey, I'm leaving. You want to go? Fine. If not, you know, go in the house. But I never did have that problem with them.
Let me ask you this. You had to go back and estimate it when Stephen and Patrick were kids. Now, and there's a point to this, me asking this question. Stephen and Patrick were kids. How much time throughout the whole year, not just hunting, but the preparation in hunting, the postseason, how many hours a year do you think you put into duck hunting, waterfowling?
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah,
serious
question.
Well,
if you hunted, let's just say 40 days, you probably spent 4 to 5 hours in a blind just in the season. So that's 200 hours right there. Let's say 200 hunting. So preseason, postseason, how much time was spent put towards duck hunting?
more than that, I'm sure, because we'd be over at the duck camp on a tractor working on the pits, or we'd be tying decoys up in the garage, or I'd be skinning ducks and they'd be right in the way, you know, watching or helping or wanting to do one themselves. I mean, we're out training the dogs and they'd be throwing dummies for me, and it seemed like it never stopped. You know, 12 months a year, there was a week didn't go by that something didn't get done connected to duck hunting. Whether,
right.
You know, and when I started shooting, I mean, we'd be out, you know, throwing clay pigeons, you know, shooting a dove during dove season is just like shooting a little duck, you know, in their minds. But, I mean, we didn't take a day off, really. I know we didn't take a week off from something connected with what we loved to do.
Well, even talking about it, gaining knowledge just talking about it. You know, the interesting fact, I was reading a story today about Tiger Woods. Way off topic. But Tiger Woods had practiced 8,000 hours of golf before he was 12 years old.
Gosh. No wonder his back went out. Well, and, you know, I can remember, and this didn't have anything to do with ducks, but I can remember we were at a field trial, which has something to do with ducks, quite obviously, because I used to shoot live flyers and marshal and judge and whatnot. But I can remember the boys and I were riding around on one of my four-wheelers, and I don't know where we were going or what we were doing, but we were cutting through the woods, I think, from one field to the next. I think I was a hunt marshal that trial, and there was a big black racer, you know, laying right there beside the path we were on, and I got off and, you know, caught it, and was showing the boys, you know, this is what this is, and this is something you look for, and I can remember one of the boys, I don't remember which one, saying, you know, it sure is neat, Dad, having you around to tell us about these things. And the reason I say that is because there's so many kids these days that don't have somebody mentor them about nature itself, much less, you know, hunting and shooting and whatnot. I think that's why some of these kids, I call them kids, some of these young guys post up, you know, these stupid, cute answers. You know, don't dare ask, you know, what's the best shotgun or duck call or something like that. You'll never hear the end of it. But, I mean, you know, it's just I'm proud of the way that I brought these guys into nature and hunting and fishing. I mean, you know, if we weren't duck hunting, we were fishing and talking about duck hunting while we were fishing. I mean, it just it was a sickness, I guess, the way you want to put it. I'm sure Gail thought that, but I've said it before and I'll say it again. I'm proud of the way my boys turned out. Wouldn't change anything.
Couple of neat things hit the internet that I'm sure that people want to hear what y'all have to say about it. Couple of pictures that I've seen on social media. One being the blonde mallard that was shared on a Facebook page of a friend of ours, TJ Mallet, at Frontline Waterfowl. And what are the odds of killing a mallard like that, Mr. Path?
How many mallards have you seen fly through the sky, and how many of those have you looked at? I mean, have you seen 100,000 mallards? Have you seen 250,000? They're not a dime a dozen. Patrick may have some more or some hard facts on that, but
how many you seen in your shop?
I've mounted probably a half dozen.
That speaks for it right there, because
I mean, you think about like how many thousands of duck we've killed at Langell Lounge, and we've never even seen one. So
right,
night. I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah,
I mean,
you got to understand this. You got to understand this too, Rocky. That anytime you have a color mutation that takes away their camouflage, they're basically standing out there in red long-handled underwear. It's hard for a leucistic bird to blend in with anything other than a snowpack, or leucistic albino, whatever, they lose their natural defense system of camouflage, especially a hen. I mean, a lot of them don't make it to adulthood, I'm sure, and dealing with them, the leucistic color mutation, and I'm talking birds that, you know, xanthic, erythric, albino, blonde, whatever names you want to put on them, their feathers are weak. They wear real bad. I mean, they don't produce a real strong feather. So, you know, they're weak. That's a weak gene to begin with.
Well, the lighter the feather color is, the less the keratin they have in the, you know, so the strength does decrease. I mean, that's why snow geese have black wingtips. I mean, their flight feathers are black. I mean, I know swans are white all over, and they seem to be a little more exception to the rule. But yeah, when you're dealing with an albino or a blonde or something like that, their feathers are noticeably weaker.
That's why when you kill one late in the year, they're four down real bad. I've got a leucistic pintail that was killed in Mexico, and you know, boy, you can put her next to a regular hen, and you can really see the feather wear and on the birds. It's like I say, it's a weak link. A lot of them never make it out of the nest, much less, you know, to fledge, because, you know, every hawk flying over is going to target something light colored that can't hide. You know, I'm proud for them. They killed it, number one, and you mentioned number two is they knew what they had, so they didn't have it on a duck strap or with, you know, 10 geese piled on top of it. I mean, it looked like they took care of it. It's you know, hens are bad to have pin feathers anyway because they go through a secondary molt to produce down, but I'm sure that bird's going to be pin feathered, and hopefully the taxidermist that gets hold of it will be able to handle it, and it's tricky with them sometimes. But I'm proud for them.
You know, it's kind of odd that you bring up the point about the mallard hen being able to hide, but I was reading a post, and I don't know where, I can't remember where I read it. I don't think it was on Duck South, but somebody talking about the only placing a whole lot more mallard drakes in your spread than hens. I mean, more than 2-1, because most of the time your hens kind of try to stay hidden in a pattern or in a hole. True or false?
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. I mean, you know, it's their natural instinct, but I guess the second part of that, or the other side of the coin or whatever, you know, that breeding plumage of a drake just stands out so much more too that,
exactly right,
you know, you got a brown spread out there, it's not gonna
stand out,
it's not gonna have the same attracting ability, you would think, you know, from a distance, that, you know, the bright colors of the drakes would.
I just thought that was a neat thought. It's,
well,
it's,
you
really
know,
cool thought.
Another equation, though, a single mallard drake shows up and you got 100 hen decoys out there, he'll think he's at the chicken ranch in Las Vegas or in Nevada and fall right in. As funny as that may sound, I'm sure it could be possible. But, you know, drakes are, they always outnumber hens because the hens are more vulnerable. I read a study one time that a red fox would take 14 hens a week off their nest to feed the kits. I mean, that's a lot of dead hens. Delta, I think somebody published something that in 180,000 hen, not just mallards, but hens were killed by predators. Patrick, you may know.
I can't remember. It's been so long since I worked up there.
But it was a significant number. It wasn't a flash in the pan, and that's why I get a little peeved at guys that, especially on a bluebird day, we'll get a flock of ducks in and, you know, two or three drakes fall and you got a hen mallard skying and somebody will stand up and shoot her up against clear blue sky.
They don't need to eat. Another fact about a brood is out of eight, let's just say it. Let's take eight. That's a nice even number. Six of those are going to be drakes versus two hens, right? Somewhere in that neighborhood on average?
Five out of eight?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say it's definitely more than 50%.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just talking to a guy tonight that has some wood duck gadwall hybrids, which are absolutely gorgeous hybrids that he raised. He hatched out six, and five of them were drakes. So it does, a brood does produce a lot of targets for the duck hunters, so why shoot the brown ones? I mean, it just, there's really no excuse for it, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. Even though we may be in a liberal framework, and it's okay, you're probably not going to affect the population, but why? Why do it?
Why? Well, nobody that duck hunts that I know of is a subsistence hunter. I mean, let's face it. You know, if you don't have any ducks to eat, ask me, I'll give you some. But I mean, it's just to make the pile bigger. And I saw a picture somebody had post up, and they had, I don't know how many guys were in the woods. I mean, evidently it was a bunch of people, but they had a big pile of drakes, but laid out right in front of them was probably 20 or 25 hens, and they were so proud. But, you know, if you do the math on, and we may have talked about it before, but like I say, I can't remember, but if you do the math, you know, a hen mallard imprints in Riley, she brings her brood back, those ducks bring their broods back. You know, you're looking at a, you know, if you do a plus or minus 3 sigma unit bell curve, you're looking at a ungodly amount of ducks that are produced just by one hen. So,
exactly.
You know, if you take her out of the equation, that's an ungodly number of ducks that will never exist. You know, of course, I hear the excuse from everybody at the duck club, and I'm not Lily White. I've killed hens accidentally, more than a few times, but, you know, poor ladder, collateral damage or whatever. I still remember a little episode with Steven and I on some, but it's not necessary. And if you care anything about the sport, you know, quit shooting the damn things. it doesn't make your chest swell up any bigger to have, you know, 20 mallards and half of them hens. You know, doesn't impress me.
I'd rather come out with an empty strap as two hen mallards.
I would too. And the reason that Arkansas at one time was one mallard hen, and the reason they went back to two that was allowed in the federal framework was because so many of the game wardens were reporting that people were shooting an extra hen or shooting another hen or accidentally or whatever, and it was getting stomped in the mud. So that's why they went back to two mallard hens. But, you know, you've got people with a mentality that say, well, it's legal, so I'm going to shoot her. You know, if a pair comes in the woods, we're going to kill both of them, and it's legal, and you can't do anything about it, Well, fine, but you can't hunt with me. There have been several guys at the club, you know, even guests that I didn't know from Adam's house cat that I've had conversations with without a smile on my face while I'm talking about it. And I'd rather see a mallard hen killed than a pintail hen because they're in more trouble, I guess. But, you know, hen ducks, they run the gauntlet from the time they lay that first egg to the time that they get to wherever they're going. Everything's trying to kill them. You know, not just somebody with a shotgun.
I'll tell you another interesting one that popped up this week, though, guys, was the picture from Matt Barnett in Ranchland Outfitters. And Andy Salmon sent it to me from this guy we work with on the migration report on Duck South. And he's up there working with Matt right now. But the duck with the four legs, I actually, when that was posted on Duck South, I said, okay, here comes another croc post, you know, a croc-like. "Quote unquote croc-like post," just to, you know, hey, look at me. But I talked to Andy the next day, And it's freaking real. This duck had four attached feet to its body.
Yeah, you don't know if that's one of those things that started out as maybe double yoked and, you know, partially absorbed, you know, what would have been a twin. Of course, you hear about it more in mammals, you know, sharing the same ovaries and what, you know, it's not, I guess it wouldn't be as common in ducks or birds, period, because it's hard for two of them to hatch in that one egg. But or it could have just been something, you know, completely some type of genetic mutation. Like, say, I've seen pictures of deer with, like, thick legs and stuff like that. Like, say, you tend to see it more in mammals, but that was real interesting, to say the least.
Well, chicken farmers see that a lot with multiple legs too, because they're raising so many. And what I've read, and Gail and I were talking about it actually, because she's a biologist just like I am. That one postulation would be that, you know, it was a double yolk, both of them fertilized, and once the embryonic stage started, one zygote was stronger than the other, and it absorbed the majority of it. But if you look at the picture of that bird, it's a young bird. It's in very poor shape. The chances of it surviving as far as it did was almost astronomical. But, you know, generally something like that never gets off the nest or creates a pathway for it to reach adulthood. I've raised quail before that have come out multi-legged, and they didn't last long. They were weak. It surprised me that bird had fledged and was flying.
I wonder if it swam twice as fast as the other ones.
And I just wonder if the two vestigial legs on it were functional, or if they were just, you know, if like were, drag chutes.
Yeah.
Out of how many thousand million of ducks have several dozen of us seen and never seen anything like that?
Yeah. But
there again, that's one of those things about being driven. That's why you go, because you get liable to see something different every day. You do go. So, but you won't see it when you don't go. But it,
One of the things that interests me, I want to hear y'all on this, because, all right, make sure I got this right. I've never been to Canada. In Canada, you can kill seven ducks, correct?
Eight.
I think,
I think six.
I was going to say, I know in, like, there's certain restrictions within that, because, like, Nova Scotia. Somebody posted about black ducks, and it made me think about Nova Scotia, because I know, like, Joel Williams went and hunted up there a couple of years ago, and the black duck limit was six. I don't know if the overall duck limit is six or the overall duck limit was eight, but you can only kill six blacks. I actually think it's four cans and four redheads.
I know Pintail's like, got a restriction on them, too.
I think there's, like, four Pintails.
I don't know, but it's like eight mallards, eight gadwalls, eight teals, so, you know, whatever like that.
And it may depend on the province, too, of course. But,
right.
You know, it's...
Here's the thing I want to ask you guys. All right, eight ducks total. And if you go out there, you can kill six hens and two drakes for your limit. Because they're all brown at that point. But you cross over that border, like we were talking about in Ramsey's podcast yesterday, you can't kill but two hens. So you got to let those suckers get right on top of you. I mean, 15, 20 yards.
Oh, yeah.
At this point in the year, to be able to tell a difference. I mean, you're looking at maybe a difference in the bill a little bit right now, the green streak on the side of the head.
Yeah. You know, Dad and I have hunted. I can't remember what time of year was it we went to
Manitoba.
I know it was early. I mean,
it was in October, I believe.
Okay, I thought it was, but I couldn't remember. And you know, we still killed a lot of hens on accident because you're shooting brown ducks. But like you say, you just size at that point in time is probably your best guess, but it's not a guarantee.
Well, we actually saw ducks that hadn't fledged yet up there, if you'll remember, on that little river.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean,
That's got to have a huge effect.
Of course it does.
I mean, shooting all those hens.
It's the same ducks we get coming down here. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw a picture somebody had Grip and Grin posted up, and it looked like everything on the ground everything on the ground was brown. Even the drakes hadn't even started to show any color on their head hardly at all, and I had to zoom in and look real close, and I think it was 50-50 or 60-40 hens over drakes in that picture. I mean, you know, it's almost like politicians. You know, in Canada, you're playing by different rules than you are down here. But, you know, be able to shoot eight ducks and you got eight hen mallards, good Lord, you've taken. And, you know, you've got these biologists say, well, it doesn't matter. Well, hell yes, it does matter. Because a dead hen won't lay another egg. That's a fact. You can quote me on that. I mean, but there again, how many people do you know that go to Canada and bring back all the legal meat that they legally can bring back? I don't know any that do.
Not many.
Shooting ducks in Canada is fun. I've done it. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
It doesn't the trips I have taken to Canada have been to go shoot geese. Because we don't get Canada geese down here like they do in places up there. And that's, you know, Dad and I have made a couple of trips and it's all to shoot geese, and ducks have just been an afternoon thing or whatever. But, and that's why it doesn't excite me. I mean, because they're not colored up. And I know it sounds weird. Like I said, shooting them was fun. Don't get me wrong. But because you were just shooting a brown duck and you didn't always know if it was a drake or a hen, it wasn't the same.
Well, I didn't go to Canada until after the boys were, I probably didn't go to Canada until one or both of
late
them
90s.
Were with me. Yeah.
I think it was like late 90s, early 2000, the first time.
Well,
you went to
Canada. I didn't want to. There had been nothing up there excited me, you know, other than shooting the geese, the Canadas and big geese and whatnot. But I mean, people saying, well, you know, don't you want to go to Canada? I said, to collect what? I mean, I had a guy call me today, invited me to go to Lake St. Clair to hunt in early December, the same place that Fred Zink did the video with the divers boys with the cans and redheads, and
mm-hmm.
where they just stomped them. Of course, that's when we're going to Texas. But now that would interest me because it's December and it's on – you know, basically a border lake up there. That would interest me, but
yeah.
I had to decline, but the invitation's still open for next year if I make it that far. But that would be on my bucket list, that and Walpole Island. I was just I went to Green Bay, Wisconsin, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and we went to a little nature center up there. And if you've never seen a black duck, up close and personal, taking corn out of your hand, you need to go to Green Bay. And the people at this nature center where they rehab birds of prey and waterfowl and everything else, they said they'll get 3,000 black ducks in their peak. And I'm talking on like a 2-acre lake. It was pretty interesting to see. So, I mean, there's lots to see and do in Canada. It's just that never was high on my bucket list.
It just seems like Canada in the past 10 years has gone nuts, because the previous 10 years, late '90s, all the way up to say 2008, 2010, I remember a few people going up there, but not like today. Today it's just nuts.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
People are driving up. Go ahead, Stevie.
I was saying this to me. It's almost like now. No, it's more like you said, Rocky. It's just like, who's not going to, instead of who's going. It's more of, I hear more people going that don't go, it seems like. I mean, it's definitely become a lot more popular than I can remember in the past. I mean, it's, I don't know if it's just people just looking at an extra opportunity to get a start to the season instead of waiting until, you know, mid-November or what it is, or easier, it's easier to get to. It's not cheaper, I know that, but it definitely seems like the popularity going to Canada definitely has grown in the past decade.
Some of these Canada hunts, I'm talking three-day hunts, you could go to Argentina for the same price. On some of these hunts up there, and we just had some friends or a friend get back. It was up there hunting with some mutual friends that, you know, hell, there was 10 of them. The day you find me in a spread with 10 people shooting, you know, I'm going to be like Weekend at Bernie's. They're going to have me out there just to shoot my limit because I'm not going to be enjoying it. Shoot a goose, drag dead. I mean, you know, it's just... That doesn't interest me, but there's a lot of lodges that have popped up, and there's a lot of money being poured into it. I'm sure Avery's selling a hell of a lot of decoys that end up in Canada. Yeah, it's a pilgrimage for a lot of people. You know, once they go, they got to go back. And, you know, every year, you know, people are driving from all over the map to get up there. I don't know when the well's going to run dry or if it will or not, but,
I don't know what it is about Weekend at Bernie's. You're the second person that's brought it up on this podcast, and I think about it. Used in the context that we're talking about at the time, and I just died laughing. I have to put the phone on mute because you don't know what you're missing if you hadn't seen Weekend at Bernie's. How that movie got a sequel, I have no clue at all. Weekend at Bernie's too. I mean, Weekend at Bernie's
was probably, he was probably rotted by then.
Exactly. Weekend at Bernie's was awesome, but how do you create a sequel about a guy that's dead?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, like I say, I'm too old for all that. I don't want to be in a group with 10 people, especially if I don't know all of them. And you know, if you put three people together that are strangers, one of them's going to be an asshole. I mean, it's just proven fact. So that's why I want to hunt with my friends, my good close friends, the ones that Gail wouldn't have to pay to be a pallbearer, or my boys. That's what interests me, you know, now more than ever before. And now that I've had a taste of hunting with my grandkids, that's going to be number one, main most priority now. And I look forward to Mary Claire and hope one day I'm still around when Olivia can get out there too. So, but I look forward to it. I really do. But I don't look forward to hunting with 10 people. And we've been on trips before where they've mixed groups. And boy, that's the worst thing that I've been a part of. Anyway, you guys going to Canada, choose your operations and outfitters wisely. You know, make sure you're not going to end up in the same bedroom with 10 guys that you don't know, or at a spread with that many too. So, like I say, just choose wisely.
Well, look, as we close out tonight, I want to ask y'all this. Looking back over all these episodes, because this isn't the end. You know, everybody keeps saying, no, you can't let the waterfowler end. You can't let this series end. It's not. All three of them are going to be on the podcast probably once or twice a month on different podcasts with me. So I look forward to that outside of just doing the episodic series with them. Patrick, you'll be seeing a lot of Patrick here in the next few weeks. But Mr. Pat will be on here all the time discussing waterfowl.
I did catch another snake today. I sent you a picture of it.
Big, huge rat snake. Huge rat snake.
Yeah, it was full grown.
But I want to ask y'all this. As you look back over the 14 or 15 episodes that we've done, I want to hear from each of you. What, and I'm not saying, did you go back and listen to them? And yeah, that's it. what was your favorite, if you didn't listen to it, what was your favorite episode to record? But if you did, what was your favorite episode to listen to? We'll start with Stephen, Patrick, and then we'll end with Mr. Pat.
I mean, to me, it'd be a tie with all the ones we've done. I know a lot of them kind of run together, but it'd definitely be a tie between last week's episode and then the episode of Dog, the first Dog episode we did. Those would be the two that you know, I'm definitely saving those and downloaded them to keep those in my records forever. But yeah, those two to me are kind of ones that I've listened to more than once. When we got done recording it, it was just like, damn, that's going to be a good one. You know, that's one I'm proud of and glad we did. And that means the most to me. It may not mean the most to people listening to it, of course, but it's just something that those two will forever be my favorite ones we've done so far.
And I'm telling you, if you're listening to this now and you have not listened to the Our Dog episode, stop whatever you're doing this weekend. If you're going on a drive, I don't care. Listen to that episode. It is awesome. If you'd love to duck hunt and you love dogs, you have to love dogs, retrievers, if you duck hunt, man, that episode. Patrick?
I'll have to agree with Steven on last week. Last week was really good. I definitely enjoyed that one.
What did we talk about last week?
Lord of mercy.
Our
why. Spots and our why and that sort of stuff. It was all, you know, Rocky didn't let us know what we were going to talk about. Just hit
the spot.
But
that one.
One of my favorite was the first one we had Steven on. After Dad and I had done a couple and, you know, gone through his background and the heart attack and all that, and then we had Steven on. That was that first one with him was my favorite.
Yeah, when Steven joined up with us in that third episode, it brought a different dynamic to this. I'm going to be honest with y'all, which I'm always honest. Will Primos told me never to say that. Don't ever use those words because. And tell somebody that you've lied to them in the past. I've never lied to you. So I was really concerned that having four of us on an episode, not sitting across the table, not knowing when the other one's not gonna, you know, gonna speak, was gonna be an issue. But man, it has turned out to be one of the most awesome series that I've been a part of. And just bringing Steven, bringing a different perspective, Patrick bringing a different perspective. And then as you're listening to this, you probably don't see it, but Patrick and Steven helping Mr. Pat along remember some of this stuff. See it or
yeah. When y'all asked me to join, I'm like, why in the world do you want me to talk? I'm like, it was almost like, man, I hope it's just a one episode deal. And they asked me to tell my story that I'm bowing out. Because, I think I'm definitely not going to miss one now. But, yeah, it was kind of a not sure what was going to happen and how it was going to flow. But like you said, it's just been easy how we've done it here. And I'm glad that part of it now continue to do it with Dad. But, yeah, I've always thought this podcast is about Dad and, you know, his story. I mean, like, we're just me and Patrick here, like you said, just to help him remember and get his story out right.
I'll say this. I shouldn't say concerned. I was concerned that people are going to be running over each other. And let me give you a perspective from a person that edits this every week. When we come into this podcast, we do the opening. I've never seen a group of guys, especially three, that times it perfectly. Hey, how are y'all doing? Boom, boom, boom. That's one of the things I remember about recording this series. It's never any cuts in the editing room that I have to make is from people stepping over one another, except for me. I step on y'all all the time, and I apologize for that. But y'all are, it's like y'all are a team. because it comes across perfectly for me when I'm editing it. There's no run over.
And we've had lots of practice.
Pros.
Well, Mr. Pat, you want to know my favorite one?
We're waiting.
Oh, I thought somebody was going to say, yeah. Dogs, without a doubt. I mean, there's if I've got a soft spot in my heart, it's about my dogs. You know, boys, of course, but the episode about the dogs, you know, bringing back the memories of the dogs I've had and the retrieves they've made and the joy they've brought me. And, you know, this past weekend we were hunting Dewey. I think Dewey's 10 years old now. And, you know, got arthritic, you know, repaired knee, but, you know, man, he's still going strong after birds. And, you know, I'm glad Reed got to see that, and I hope, you know, Mary Claire and even Olivia get to see dogs work the caliber of some of the ones we've had, and we've been very fortunate with that. That would be my first choice, you know, without a doubt.
From a host perspective, like I said, the dog would be my favorite. I knew when we recorded it, when I hit the end button that night, we all walked away when the fat lady came on and said, "It's, you know, this call recording off." We all said, "Holy crap, that was awesome." I remember that. That was the night of the thunderstorms.
Yeah.
We stayed on the phone probably 20 minutes after we got through recording that episode. Man, I'm going to get struck by lightning out here.
Yeah.
But personally, all right, I'm going to tell you something. Personally, my favorite was when Steven came on and gave his third eye perspective on Mr. Pat's heart attack. For me, that changed the story.
Well, that's something that Patrick and I hadn't really, well, Patrick maybe, but I'd never heard it before from his perspective, because it's not something we sit around and, hey, remember, what was it, January the 11th or whatever?
Yeah, remember that time you almost died? Yeah, we usually don't.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I knew parts of it. I knew most of it, but I didn't know all of what transpired with him that day. So even I learned something, you know, listening to him then.
I mean, don't get me wrong, the podcast episode where you and your dad talking about was awesome. It was unbelievable. But to get that, when you hear a story like that from a kind of that first person perspective, the participants and somebody that's laying or not laying, but in a blind across the field watching it go on, the fan perspective, or I guess you'd say in a sports term, it changes the dynamic of the story.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the epilogue to all that, too, the following year, a year from the date, was it January the 11th?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know who, Patrick or Steven, somebody said, hey, we're going up to Red Legs Lodge to eat dinner tonight, and they had a one-year birthday party for me up at Red Legs Lodge with Chris Aiken and George King and Mike Roach and several of the other people up there, and I thought that was really nice. So I'm probably one of the few people you know that have two birthdays, one on July 3rd and one on January the 11th. I'll be 7 this year. That's 7 more years that God gave me to enjoy what I do and who I do it with.
Yeah. You get to see Reed and Mary Claire last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of my picture on my Facebook page is me and Mary Claire and Reed on a four-wheeler riding around in the fields around the duck camp. I mean, that was as much fun to me as hunting. You know, those of y'all that have grandkids in your future, and Larry Redmond used to tell me there's nothing like it, and that was the truest thing that man ever told me. You can't put a feeling on it until you feel it yourself.
The one thing that I want to say to y'all as a group, on the air, recorded, the biggest thing to me being a part of this, man, y'all opened your arms up and made me a part of your family almost on the air. On the air and off the air when we're talking. I mean, it's been really cool to be a part of this. You know, because the three of y'all could have, you know, I could have just sat there and asked you questions, but you always included me in that conversation. Always made me feel like I was a part of it.
Yeah, it's even though you're an Ole Miss fan, we can overlook sometimes.
But I've had a ball doing it, man.
Yeah, well, we've enjoyed it too. And if we've made one, if we've done one thing to help somebody that's just getting started in all this, or have said one thing that they've taken to heart and they remember, you know, I think it's been a success. I count my blessings every day.
I get tons and tons of Facebook messages about this episodic series every week, every single week. And people make comments to me all the time about a quote or some fact that may have been laid out there through this series, and I get those all the time.
Well, I get a lot of messages, Facebook and Messenger, and you know, even phone calls from people that have legitimate questions that they don't want to ask because they don't want to get beat down by asking something that they think may be stupid. And, you know, I appreciate, I mean, Lord knows, I looked up to Dr. Andrews like he was a saint, and I'm far from that, but, you know, I appreciate the opportunity to help some people, you know, clear something up that I've done or hadn't done or need to do or don't do. It's been enjoyable, and I appreciate all the time you spent with us, too.
Like I said, don't anybody think that Stephen, Patrick, or Mr. Pat are going anywhere. They're always welcome on here. I'll be calling on them all the time for we're going to start recording a couple of, I want to say, tips and tactics, I guess you'd say. I hate to use those words, but tips and tactics podcast, because that's something that's lacking in this podcast. We need a couple of those per week for the younger hunters. And I'll be calling on y'all all the time to come on there for that, to talk about, to back it up with experience and facts also. So,
I had a lot of been there and done that. So, fortunate in that respect. But I appreciate your time. I really do.
Stephen, Patrick, Mr. Pat, for the last time all together in this series, again, thank you. Let me say that I'm honored to be a part of this, and I truly mean that. Very honored, because this is something that's going to live for a long time on the internet. People will come back to this and listen to this.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do.
Thank y'all again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
Ladies and gentlemen.